And welcome to the Boiled Sports Handsome Hour. Jay Money is off getting his hair and nails did. I'm your host, Boiler Dowd. I'm here with the equally or more handsome Anish. How are you this evening, Anish?
I'm lovely. You know, everybody needs a chance to treat themselves. You know, I think Jay Money is.
He's
earned the, you know, the facial, I think.
Yeah, no kidding. Day of beauty is good for him, and exactly. he'll be back refreshed and ready to go when it, when exactly. he probably comes back, if not in a week before then, if he comes back. This is good news. Today's show is sponsored by a new sponsor. We've got a couple new sponsors coming.
Oh yeah,
we got a sponsor.
MartinVintage.com. Martin Vintage is an upstart. Or startup, that'd be better. A startup t-shirt company doing classic and vintage. Vintage. Yeah, this is a good start for them. Doing classic and vintage Purdue t-shirts. If you're watching, I believe Anish is wearing one of their products right now.
I am, in fact, wearing one.
He is.
They are incredibly soft. They were way softer than I thought. What's cool, so you are in the industry, Mr. Boiler Dad, and you know how hard it is to get licensing for the actual, like, so the shirt that I'm wearing is a Boilermaker football shirt. It's gray, it's light gray, and it's got Purdue Pete, like an old Purdue Pete, not the original, you know, not the original stout man. Like, this is kind of the updated with the greasy hair Purdue Pete, and I love
I love
this Purdue Pete so much. They've got a really
if
Ross Aid in the background.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, the if you'd like to look as good as Anish, go to martinvintage.com and enter Boiled for 20% off, thanks to your pal Anish, who is modeling Martin Vintage Purdue Boilermaker football t-shirt tonight. So that's exciting. That's a new thing. Now Anish can get the gold grill he had his eye on. That's really, really good news.
Exactly. It's the Boiled Sports gold grill. I mean, like, let's be serious. Come on. You guys are welcome to use it whenever. It's just going to be at my house.
That's like, right. Yeah.
You're welcome. You're welcome whenever you want to. You can't.
Well, this is the banter that maybe we could have had. Yeah, before we went live, this is the banner that we're missing. It's a little wild. Maybe the caffeine's kicking in just now.
Oh, the ice cream is kicking in. That's right.
There you go. So you eat an ice cream every night? Is that your ritual?
Yeah, that's the key to beauty. Actually, you know what it is? It's post wedding. Okay. Post wedding, nobody cares about what they look like after the wedding.
Don't care.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The wedding, those pictures last forever. Yeah. You want like a jawline? You know, like it'd be nice. Now it's like, I don't
just
care.
Just lose the jawline after that.
yeah. I'll have a Matt Painter jawline for the rest of my life. I don't care. In my wedding pictures, I look good. That's all that matters.
All you got to do is sharpen the beard. That's what I want. You just sharpen the beard and then the jawline returns.
You have that down to a science.
Yeah. I've been working on it for a few years. So I had the Kyle Orton neck beard for a bit. That didn't help me.
A heavy neck beard, you have to be confident in your jaw, you know.
Yeah, you got to be a big guy, too, to really pull that off without people making fun of you. And even Kyle Orton, being a big guy, still had people making fun of him.
Yeah, but he was also Kyle Orton.
Yeah. I love that dude. I love that dude. So hopefully he'll be back in West Lafayette this Saturday for the 4 p.m. kickoff. Another Fox Sports game, kind of a prime time-ish.
Big Fox
sports game. It's pretty cool.
Big Fox, and they were doing, so I think I was watching one of the NFL games, actually, so the Sunday afternoon games, and all they were playing over and over again were the preview of Purdue Michigan at 4 o'clock, and then the Notre Dame game, or not Notre Dame, because that's NBC. It was somebody else, like whoever's playing the late game.
I think it's Notre Dame. Is it Notre Dame Michigan State, right?
I thought it was Notre Dame, but it was Fox. So like, how would they,
I think it's at Michigan State. It's at Michigan State. Oh, so they have the rights to it. I think that's it. And yeah, it's,
they were
pretty cool. Those are two pretty classic matchups. That's fun. That's fun
stuff. I mean, like, they were plugging that. They were plugging it every single break. There were ads every single, or there was that one same ad that they ran every single break. Like, they were pumping up Purdue, Michigan, which is like, you know, and the spread came out, it was 10 points. And so if you would have asked me a month ago what the spread for week four Purdue, Michigan would be, I'd be like 23, maybe. Like, you know, just over three touchdowns.
I said the same thing. Yeah, 20 to 30 points. My college roommate, fellow Boilermaker class of, I want to say, 95, December 95. He had one of those mid-year graduations. He sent me that very text. He said, can you believe the spread is only 10? And the funny thing is, you know, these little victories, I mean, but the sad thing is a home game and having a 10-point spread is no victory at all, right? I mean, if we're looking through the prism of a football program that was solid and been doing well for a couple of years, be like, this is disrespect. But right now we're like, wow, this is kind of like,
I mean, so
maybe even Vegas thinks there's a chance, kind of.
Yeah, well, so even objectively, it's like they're the eighth ranked team in the country. Now that ranking is probably a little inflated, just because actually once you get past what, three or four, actually maybe once you get past four or five, there's like a steep drop off. I actually think Penn State, even though Penn State might hit, and we'll talk about this in the Big Ten pod next week. I think Penn State's a little overrated. Like, Saquon Barkley looks incredible. Saquon Barkley's amazing. But for Penn State to be number five, like, there's a pretty steep drop off after the top four. And so Michigan being number eight might be, you know, for kind of a rebuilding young Michigan team, might be a little high. But I still think, you know, a top 10 team going on the road to an unranked team, discounting the history of Purdue, you know, the recent history of Purdue football. I think that's kind of a fair line. Like, I think it's a super fair line, but I think objectively even, I don't know if there's
Vegas isn't stupid, you know, but yet. Yeah, they missed last week though, pretty badly, didn't they?
Well, and so that last week is because, I think a lot of people were looking at that, 72 points that Missouri scored in the first, the first game. Even in the second game, they were at 20, 30 points. And so everybody's expecting it to be kind of a high scoring. Nobody expected it, really. And maybe we can start off here, or maybe actually, like, to me, this is kind of the key to the game. The defense is what nobody expected. Vegas's models didn't expect the defense. I don't think, even if you looked at the coaches' quotes from the offseason, I don't think the coaches expected the defense to play this well over the first 3 weeks. And so the defense is the one is to me what's going to win Purdue the game. I don't think it's going to be on the offensive side of the ball. The offensive side of the ball, when Purdue has the ball, I think a win for Purdue is when those two geniuses, Jeff Brohm and the entire offensive mind, the entire Brohm hive mind versus Doc Brown or Don Brown and Michigan's defense. And that has college football nerds like excited, because it's two of the more creative, aggressive schemes going against each other. But now it's if those teams play each other to a stalemate, then the defense has to step up against a Michigan offense that doesn't look that good.
No, it doesn't look good at all. In fact, they couldn't score until the middle of the third quarter last week. At times they've sputtered along, and even Harbaugh's remarked how he's not super happy with some of their productivity. And it's weird to me when you have an ex-quarterback who can't really find a quarterback. He's going into, is this his second season or is this his third season? I can't remember. Third season. Okay. And he really doesn't have, he hasn't had a quarterback that I think is his guy yet, or has espoused to his philosophy, you know, kind of been, you know, an understudy or a mini me or whatever you want to call it.
I mean, because at Stanford, he obviously had Luck. And then even in the pros, he had Alex Smith and Colin Kaepernick. You know, and Kaepernick was the one that, the pros that he loved, and he groomed him. And so, yeah, it is kind of surprising that to this point, he doesn't seem to have a guy. And Michigan's current quarterback is not, I mean, he's fine.
Yeah.
But like,
nothing to write home about, though.
Spate. But like, yeah, he's a senior. And he hasn't really shown that much. And I'm sure that Michigan has a freshman, that I don't know about that, is redshirting right now. And that's going to be, you know, he's going to be the guy, but it's still kind of surprising that, they don't have it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, total offense, Michigan's around the center of the pack in the conference. And, talent's never really the problem at Michigan, is it? I mean, if you looked at Michigan's stable, I'm sure there's a guy in there that would be a solid quarterback someplace. He's just not working out for Harbaugh, like you're saying. There's a freshman back there, a sophomore, somebody in the stable that's good. I don't. I'm not educated enough on Michigan football recruiting to give you any information there. What we do know is they've got road graders on both sides of the ball. They always have size. They always have speed. So this is going to be really a great test of Brohm and Holt's ability to counterpunch. Athletes, right? I mean, they did a really good job. Louisville had athletes, but Louisville had some big youth, right in the strength of their offensive line. Mm-hmm. Their defensive line clearly isn't as good as we thought it was. Clemson, they were really de-pantsed, quite frankly, on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, but
Clemson
might be on a different plane, though. Clemson and Bama, like, those two teams might be playing a different sport than everybody else this year.
Yeah, I think everybody thought Clemson's defense would be good again. I mean, that's the thing. Mm-hmm. But did we think that Clemson's offense would be able to do what they did versus Louisville? Especially, I would think that was the game that Petrino would kind of circle. Huh? Yeah, mm-hmm. Without Watson. It was a little disappointing for me to see that, not because I'm a Louisville fan by any means, but because I thought that would be kind of a bit of a barometer for our Boilermakers, and seeing them whipped so badly didn't feel too great, honestly, for me. It didn't change anything, though. That's the interesting thing. So if you look at that, Louisville's good to mediocre, right? You know, high teens to low 20 team, probably where they belong.
Top 20 team, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a horrible team. Purdue looked like they were going through some growing pains, trying to figure some things out in that first week. They already look better than that, right? Obviously. Ohio's a bowl team. They're probably a top 40 team. And Missouri looks like a glorified high school team, especially what we saw last week when they're in complete disarray. And, I mean, it was interesting. If you listen to our pals over at the Mazadcast, you know, they were down in the dumps going into it, but they really said Missouri had to show some things in the first 5 minutes just to get their heads on their shoulders or get their hearts in their chest, whatever you want to say. And Purdue just kind of ripped it out in front of them with a couple big plays. And David Blau was doing things that made something out of nothing over and over and over. And I do think that was actually David Blau, the best version of David Blau we've ever seen
in a
quarter and a half.
He didn't even make any better mistakes than the yeah. That second quarter, he had that one drive that coach yelled at him for. But I honestly think it was just more like he told him that he would still be rotating quarterback. So Sindelar was going to get a chance at some point. And so I don't know if it was actually anything that he did. Actually, so speaking about our friends of the Mazadcast, their post-Purdue podcast, which was completely miserable, and I enjoyed every second of their misery. What they were talking about was that their quarterback, they didn't believe that their quarterback could make plays when things broke down, when the pocket kind of collapsed. They didn't think that he could either get the 4 yards with his legs and slide, or he could step up and keep his eyes downfield, or be put really in a position where his strengths are maximized. And so that's what they were talking about David Blau. Like, he was this, he was this different level quarterback. Yeah. And it's like, you know, like, we've watched two years and a couple games now of David Blau. And he's very efficient, and he's accurate enough. But it's not like he's got a cannon, you know, and it's not like he's the smartest quarterback. You know, he's not the most brilliant quarterback. He makes Purdue had, what was the stupid stat that we were saying? I think that, somebody was saying on the, group chat earlier, it was, that David Blau had, this was the first time that Purdue had gone without an interception in like 2 years. the first game or this season. And so, spent the entire game without an interception. And so Blau does make those stupid mistakes, but to hear another team who hasn't watched him every single game for 2.5 years now, talk about what a good quarterback he was. Like, that was just kind of, that was illuminating to me.
Yeah. I mean, the really interesting thing to me, when you look at Blau, is we saw bad David Blau for about, what, a quarter, right, versus Louisville. It was, and he was pretty lousy, maybe a quarter and a half. And I'm still convinced, and I can let the rumor out of the bag that I heard weeks ago that I never really publicized, but the rumor, it's unfounded, or not unfounded, it's, I haven't seen anything to back it up other than it kind of looked like it. The rumor that I heard was that he actually had his shoulder scoped after that injury, which isn't a big deal. I've had my shoulder scoped, and I was up at him pretty quickly, and I didn't have the training group that he did. But anytime you get cut on, if this is true, keep in mind, I'm saying this was a rumor. I heard it from a good source, I thought. But if he had his shoulder scoped 10 days before that Louisville game, that's a big difference, obviously.
And it would explain,
when you're in pain and when you're fatigued, you make stupid mistakes. It would explain a lot. We haven't seen a bit of that. Granted, Ohio didn't push him and Missouri didn't push him. So Michigan will push him. So the question is, will old David Blau creep back in, or has he had enough tutelage, enough coaching to raise that play for an entire game? I guess we'll see.
I think the biggest thing is, like, will he be will he play with as much trust in the coaching system as he has played in the last two games? You know, that's the biggest thing the Brohm brothers put him in positions where he just makes quick decisions. He basically has, I mean, that was a big complaint over the last 2 years, or 3 years, like two offensive coordinators over the last 3 years, or how many ever we had. I can't even remember now. I've blocked it. The playbook was so deep and it was so unnecessarily complicated. This was with Shoup, like, it, and there were like 4, 5, 6 different situations for each play, and it's not straightforward. Right. The cool thing about Brohm's playbook is that from the quarterback's perspective, it seems to be very straightforward. You do X, Y, you read Z, and you throw. You know, and it's everything else that the complexity is added. It's the it's the combination of wide receiver routes combined with what the tight ends are doing up the seams. It's what the running back is doing. It's how the offensive line is blocking that's confusing the linebackers. That is where the confusion is put on a defense. And David Blau doesn't, that's what I was asking last week. Does the quarterback matter? It's like, maybe a great quarterback can take this offense will take this offense to the next level. I have no doubt. I think any quarterback who can make it at the Big Ten level, or is at the level even coming out of high school that Elijah Sindelar or David Blau were, both, I don't think Sindelar was Elite 11, but Mr. Kentucky Football, Sindelar and the Elite 11 for Blau.
He was a high 3-star, though. I mean, that's
he was a high 3-star.
He was a decent recruit.
And so it's like, if you meet that level of, you know, you're a clear Big Ten starting quarterback, right? I think Brohm can put you in a position where everything is simple enough that you can make these reads and look like a genius. And that's the big thing. Will he trust him? Or will the rush get to him? Because Michigan's going to have that advantage. And you know, the defensive coordinator is going to be aggressive and test him out, and just to see if they can get him on his heels.
Yeah. Here's an interesting thing that I brought up to you guys off the air, off the site. David Blau is the best passing percentage in the league. He's completing 76% of his passes so far in the season. I mean, that doesn't mean he's the most efficient quarterback, because he's had, you know, some crappy that one Louisville.
The Louisville game, you can say. I mean, the Louisville game, I think both of them
killed him statistically, right?
Yeah.
Well, he looked good for a quarter. That was it, right? Mm-hmm. And Sindelar looked good for a quarter, and they both looked pretty bad in the second half. And really, we haven't seen a bad version of them since. So here's some interesting stats. So we said Blau completing 76% of his passes, still being in the top 10 in the league in spite of splitting time with Sindelar. That's pretty interesting, right? Because he's really played about two-thirds of the snaps offensively for Purdue. That's a pretty impressive stat. Michigan's quarterback Spate is 10th in the league in passing. Michigan does not have a receiver in the top 10 in receptions. Michigan does not have a running back in the top 10 in rushing. So that offense, it's not only that when you watch them, they don't look impressive. They also have not been impressive statistically. And you and I have also talked about analytics this week, just recently today. And if you look at the measures by which, whether you do it by your eyes, which I always do, and then I like, oh, okay, I hate them or I love them, and I make a quick gut decision. Or if you're analytical like you are and you go through and smartly and pour over the numbers, I mean, either way, Michigan's offense looks pretty lousy and Michigan's defense looks pretty good. So this could be pretty fun because I am excited about this defense. The more I watch them, the more I see the way they do things, the emotion they play with. It's been fun to watch. Can I interject one thing that I've been wanting to talk
interject
about?
To I yourself.
Forgot to talk about this in my individual.
Interrupt. Quick. Feel free to interrupt yourself.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. So this is something that I think this was the key to the game last week, and I think this is the biggest change from previous seasons of anything that I've seen. And we all saw it. We all may have made a note of it mentally, but Purdue scored a touchdown, I believe, in the second quarter versus Missouri, and it was called back due to I can't remember the penalty.
Oh, this is the but right. The early celebration and the hold.
Yeah, there you go. So the hold was it sent them pretty far back, right? Because that was a pretty big deal. What'd they do? They scored two plays later, right? And they scored two plays later, not in a way that it felt like, they got lucky on a long pass or something like that. They just kind of played football, and I hate to. So subphrase Brahms catchphrase. Has that been trademarked, by the way, yet?
Oh my God, yeah. Oh,
let's play football.
Because they're
sure as hell hope so. I mean, I was thinking about it the other day. It's awesome. I mean, it's fantastic and it's simple and it's no nonsense, just like him. But that's the fun thing about this offense, right? Is that there's no gimmicks here. There's nothing fancy or silly happening. This isn't like when Joe Tiller came in and defense was like, we don't even know how to prepare for this. We don't have a way to scout for this. Blah blah blah. This is just an offense that's really well coached. Seems to be really solid. In spite of the inability to have, receivers catch the ball from time to time.
Yeah. Oh my God. But I mean, and that's the thing is that
the attitude is incredible, right? They just march.
Oh, and that's the biggest difference between Tiller, the 97 season. I mean, like, I don't know when this is going to go away, when we're going to stop comparing this season to 97, right? Probably when we lose three straight, right? That's probably when it'll,
After they win their bowl against Oklahoma State.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. The difference is that Joe Tiller brought in a system. It was the spread, and the spread had been tried rarely in the pros, or a little bit in the pros and rarely in college. And it to the point where Joe Tiller wasn't even wooed away by some of the big dogs in college football. He was trying to be wooed away by Colorado and that type of, that caliber of team. And so even with Purdue succeeding, it's not like these teams were lining up to get the author of that system to head their program. The difference with Brahm is that there's no system. It's not like he's bringing like the West Coast offense. It's not like he's bringing any of that. It's just creativity. It's really, really, it's just simple creativity. It's having an open mind when you are designing a playbook. It's simplifying the playbook for the quarterback so that any quarterback can step in. Any quarterback good enough. So like good enough meeting Sindelar, who with zero real reps under his belt can step in and run the system well.
Didn't he have a JUCO transfer take over for him at Western Kentucky? Is it the last year or the last 2 years he was there?
Last 2 years.
And he wasn't a guy that a lot of programs were beating down his door to get him to come on campus. You know, he was a solid quarterback. I would argue Sindelar was a more highly touted guy than that guy, and he put up massive numbers, right? Yeah. So, yeah, regardless of what it is, I mean, it's funny. I try to always think about formulas to success and reason they happen. And I think, you know, people that are smarter than me try to look at those you know, the metrics that make it happen. But the biggest thing about Brahm is I think he sells something, players buy into it, right? The way he does, the way he backs up his players is much different than Hazel. Hope backed his players up, but Hope also didn't have the football brain that Brahm does. Brahm has seems to have a good mix of being a player's coach and being a smart guy
he's a
CEO. All these things that you really need right now in modern football. I think the biggest thing is that he's got players in the position to succeed on both sides of the ball. That's the thing, you know, both on offense and defense. And he's really got the team playing hard, playing with emotion. They don't give up. I mean, that's kind of the thing with that penalty and coming right back and scoring. It's the same thing as you see just on the defensive side of the ball generally. Just guys are playing hard all the time. That's a huge deal. And
The two MVPs on the defensive end so far have been Bailey and Bentley. I mean, like they've been incredible. I mean, like they've been the first one to the ball every single time. The Western Kentucky transfer McCollum. I don't know. It's TJ. I think it's TJ.
It's McCollum. Yeah, it's very close to
the. Yeah, CJ McCollum. So that's why I get it. That's why I get them mixed up. I watch too much NBA.
Yeah.
So
that's what my son said when we were at the Louisville game. My son was like, "Did he just say CJ McCollum?" You know, over the PA, I'm like, no. My son's a bigger NBA fan than I am. So, I mean,
go out to a bar in Indianapolis and just talk hoops.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, you know what? In all seriousness, sometimes you're in town and, you know, he would watch NBA basketball. He'll watch anything and he'll start spouting off odd facts about things that I'm like, I don't even know how.
We're going to replace him. We're going to replace you with him pretty soon. So
he's better looking than me already. And you just need to get the voice part down. And even there in allergy season, I sound like this, and out of allergy season, I sound like this. So it really doesn't matter. I sound like crap generally.
The linebackers might not be, all three of them might not be available. McConnell might not be like for Saturday's game. And so that's kind of a bummer. But on the other side, Michigan is without Tariq Black there. I mean, he's a true freshman receiver, but a four-star, solid four-star receiver, and he's been pretty much their reliable option on offense. So,
for the season, because
I'm pretty sure he's out for the season. That's a bummer for him.
Yeah, that's too bad.
I don't know what the redshirt rules are
for them,
but
He used to be 50% of the snaps before the waypoint of the season. I don't know if that's changed, but I don't even know if they would try to redshirt him, honestly. You know, and if he can be eligible by the bowl game, I think there's a lot of question marks there.
That's fair.
It would change their perspective on that.
That's fair. So but both on that side of the ball, you know, when Michigan has the ball, there are a lot of question marks. And that end of the ball is where the game's going to be won. It's not when Purdue has, to me, it's not when Purdue has the ball. It's if Purdue's defense can hold Michigan, under, let's say, 26. And if they can do that, I feel, you know, like Don Brown is great, but I feel comfortable with Brahm and any offense, any capable offense that he's had time with. I'm comfortable with him scoring in the mid-20s, like against anyone.
Yeah.
That's the point. That's how far we've come, is that I'm so confident that we're going to score against one of the best defenses in the country, right? And play that end of the ball to a stalemate. And so it's going to be on hold, man. And that's a lot of pressure for a defense that, I mean, when was the last time the defense played an entire game under lights like this? Like this defense, this squad, let's say in the last 4 years, like I can't even think of one.
No, it hadn't happened. Hadn't happened.
And so it's just like, you know, this is the closest to a marquee game any of these guys are playing. Like it's
yeah.
On the other side of it, it's not like Purdue has anything to lose, right? We're not playing with anything to lose. Purdue has that's the wind behind funny. Their sails, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you've posted your predicto yet, correct?
I emailed it out. It'll be up. I think at the same time that the podcast will be up. So it'll be on the website.
Okay. So, well, I mean, the reason I asked that is I think the past weeks I haven't shown my hand at all during the handsome hours during the week. And this week but everybody's known where I've stood, right? I would say this week, the listeners, the watchers, whoever out there have said, probably don't know exactly where I stand because I sound have a little more trepidation, a little more concern because the opponent is so good. But I will say this. I will say what I'll give the preview right now.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
Okay. I've got the good guys winning. I'm the lone wolf, I think, right? I think I'm the only guy that
– You, I so think I'm, you are
I'm,
the
I'm,
only
I'm
one.
I'm staying confident.
Unless yeah, J-Money makes a late audible and joins you on that side of the fence.
He won't change.
But no way. I think I predicted a very close in the 20s win. Close loss, I mean.
Yeah.
Kind of like a heartbreaking 27-24 type loss. If that's the final score, like I'm good. That's kind of best case scenario that any of us could have dreamt going into the bye week, right? But I mean, we played this hypothetical. I think it was one of the questions in the predicto was, if the stars align and, you know, the Michigan miracle happens, the possibilities for Purdue's season, like I can't even think of it. Like it's Purdue becomes like Purdue leaps, that middle tier of the Big Ten West in Northwestern and Minnesota, right? And Purdue's immediately with Iowa and Wisconsin battling for the Big Ten West title, which is insane. It's insane to think about
it
that.
It is crazy.
But like we're
it's kind insane of insane to think about it, but it doesn't feel horribly like a reach either at the same time, does it?
I don't know. I mean, like, let's play the other side of this, is that maybe we're pulling too much from three games against a rusty Louisville team, a mediocre Ohio team. They're okay, but any Big Ten team should be able to beat any half-good Big Ten team should be able to beat Ohio, and a Missouri team that's going through probably their worst season in the history of Missouri football.
Right.
So maybe we're pulling too much for that. Maybe
so you're saying that they've done what an okay team should have done.
They've done what an okay team should have done. And this week,
I'm going to counterpunch you. Okay,
go ahead.
I've got it. Okay, it's not just that they beat a decent Ohio team; it's that they beat a decent Ohio team like a drum and controlled both lines of scrimmage. That's probably my biggest, you know, thesis for why I'm all in right now. And then not because they just beat Missouri, but because they completely destroyed them from the get-go and left no doubt by halftime, right? So with bad teams, that's what you have to do, right? And we've seen this before. If you let a team like Purdue hang around, because let's say Missouri is a lot like Purdue in the previous couple seasons, you know, if Purdue hangs around for a half, who knows? Maybe they'll compete all the way in. We know better than to think maybe they'll win. And I think Missouri fans think the same of Missouri right now, right? But Purdue just absolutely demoralized them. And then versus Louisville with a very, very shoddy group of skilled players, right? There was no identity in the offense yet. In fact, think about this. The Big Ten's fourth or fifth best runner right now, Tario Fuller, really couldn't get
–
he was Louisville. He didn't. He played horribly. He had 2.5 yards a carry, I believe, 2.7 or 2.4.
And I don't even think he was the feature back. He wasn't even the second. I think it was still Knox and Jones, and he got kind of the third running back Jones, type carry.
Yeah, that's right. And they were forced to put Fuller in there after Jones went down. So that's the other interesting thing. I haven't read anything more about, is Jones expected to play? Has he been practicing more? I know, like you were talking about McCollum earlier, and
I don't think that Jones, there hasn't been much chatter, which kind of makes me think that Jones isn't on the, you know, him playing isn't really on the, in the stars. I think he's going to, I would say he comes back after the bye week. I think that's what they're waiting for.
Right, right. Well, regardless, I think the interesting thing is, it looks like Purdue has weapons right now. Cole Herdman is a legit weapon, right?
Well, so they have at
Jackson
least
Jackson Anthrop
three.
Is solid.
Yeah, I think they have at least three. They have two tight end. I mean, they there's a really good breakdown. I linked to it on in the Predicto. There's a really good breakdown written by an SB Nation homepage, right? Or like the SB Nation like proper. College football writer who kind of broke down the film of Purdue, and they basically point out that Purdue runs sets like an NFL team does. You know, three wideouts and two like two or three wideouts and always two tight ends. And because the two tight ends and the slot receiver, those are Purdue's weapons. And you know, Phillips and Mahanku haven't shown it yet. But they're burners. They can run out routes, you know, if they, and what that column was showing was that they can run out routes, like the out routes that they are drawn to run. It's not of any, you know, skill of their own. It's the routes that they're run, the route combinations that they're running is what is throwing off defenses, is what throwing off safeties and corners. It's kind of providing that misdirection. And so they're at least doing their jobs as decoys. And Purdue has at least three receiving weapons. I would like to see, like you said on the last Handsome Hour, Saturday, our whiskey and adrenaline fueled Handsome Hour right after the Missouri win. You do want to see the running backs get a little more. You do want to see DJ Knox. Let's see what he can do with his hands. You know what I mean? Like, let's see what he can do as a receiving threat, especially against a defense where, you know, the front seven is going to get penetration against Purdue's offensive line. Maybe
they're so much better in space than anybody we've seen. I mean, one thing that Purdue's offensive linemen and David Blau both said that Missouri had one of the biggest, strongest fronts they were going to play all year. But I would argue that Michigan's are probably just as big, and they're twice as fast, and their linebackers are amazing athletes. So they'll be able to close down those gaps a lot quicker. I mean, those dump passes and you know, delay screens, and those won't be there. Not especially not for a gain of 25 or 30. You know, so. It'll be a different offense. It'll have to be a different offense, but, I still am pretty excited about it. Oh, and, I like the fact that we can talk about it.
I think it feels completely different than last week. I mean, that's what the Missouri loss or the Missouri win, buys you, right? It buys you comfort because you, at this point, I think we're comfortable that Purdue won't embarrass us. Right? Mm-hmm. The Purdue team is not going to embarrass us in any way. Even if they lose, you know that they're going to lose throwing haymakers, right? And like knowing that worst case scenario, Purdue's 2-2 into their bye week. Like it doesn't matter how they lose at this point. It Purdue goes 2-2 in the bye week. Best case scenario, Purdue has a win over a top 10 team and is going into their bye week 3-1. With the wind completely behind their sails. You know what I mean? It's just like, we can't lose this week. It's just, it's excitement.
Perspective really matters here. And I mean, that's the thing that I'm sure the coaches are reminding these players that there's nothing but an opportunity to gain ground on the entire conference and to put another feather in your cap and learn a little bit more about yourselves. And I'm sure they're closer to a sellout. I don't think they're at a sellout yet, but it'll be a better crowd than the last game at Ross-Ade regardless. I think they had passed that a couple days ago, so it'll be a great environment. It'll be exciting. I think the good guys are going to win, and I think they're going to win because of the environment. I think that's going to be a big part of it. I think it'll feel different than it did versus Ohio. So it's going to be a ton of fun. And boy, I hope I'm right. If I'm right, man. Oof.
You're just dancing down the street. That's it.
I'm going to be rich. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just put all your money on it.
And I'm not a betting man, so I won't put a nickel on it.
Yeah,
put on I'm not even betting any t-shirts about this. You know?
Yeah, you already won your Martin Vintage t-shirts from Michael already. Yeah. So I think, at least what Purdue fans should do is really watch the big picture. Don't just watch when David Blau and Purdue's offense goes against Michigan's defense, Don Brown and Michigan's defense, watch the big picture. Don't just watch David Blau. Watch what the linemen do. Watch how the receiver, or watch how the linebackers react to the line. Watch the secondary react to the wide receiver routes. Like, this is what this matchup is, honestly, what college football nerds who report on this nationally are really waiting for. Like, every one of these experts' eyes, like, there are going to be so many columns after this weekend on this game, win, lose, or draw. Like, it's going to have the eyes of at least the people that write and pay attention to the X's and O's of the sport. And so it's fun that that's our team. So, like, you know, I'm excited to, like, learn, you know what I mean? I can do this with basketball. But, like, I want to get there with football. And this is, like, that kind of a matchup where you do.
Well, there's one thing that's really cool that we saw last week, and they've added a little bit more of this each week, and that is the offensive line getting even more active, meaning you have Kirk Barron pulling way out in front of, you know, Sparks on a quarterback sneak a couple weeks ago when Purdue was in the Wildcat. Last week on one of the jailbreaks, I saw four offensive linemen down in front of Fuller. I mean, holy crap. When you have four 300 pounders out in front of you, good things are going to happen regardless, right? So it says a lot of things. It says the design of this offense dynamic, right?
That's how you overcome some of the, like, you know, you're going one-on-one against defensive linemen that might be bigger and get better leverage than you. But if you're not going against them, if you're 4-5 yards downfield going against linebackers, any Big Ten, any worthwhile Big Ten lineman is going to win that battle, you know, against a college linebacker, right? Even Missouri's linebackers, Purdue's going to, you know, these linemen are going to win that battle. Those are the kind of position, like, that's what we're talking about. Like, putting players in positions to succeed means, like, things like that. Yep. Means Kirk Barron, you know, 5 yards downfield, blocking his linebackers in secondary instead of, you know, going one-on-one against maybe a defensive end that might be bigger, better than him, like one-on-one.
Yeah.
I just think it's like, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun time, man.
Yeah. It's going to be a ton of fun. So is it here? Let me ask you a question. Obviously the score matters at the end of the game. That's the big number. But from an analytics standpoint, is this game as simple as the turnover battle if Purdue wins? Because that's kind of the way I look at it right now. If Purdue can win that, they win the game. I really think it's that simple, because both teams are really, really good at not only forcing turnovers, but Michigan's good at forcing turnovers and then scoring. I think they've done it two or three times already this season. So if Purdue can stop that, right, stop the stupid turnover that leads to an instant 6 points, I think that's huge. If Purdue can win the turnover battle, I think they win, period. That I think it's that simple. Do you have any thoughts on that idea?
Well, so I'm actually oddly confident in David Blau and the running backs to not turn the ball over this game. I think the yips are a little done. I think they're pretty comfortable with the roles that they're given. I think the passes aren't going to be in dangerous spots. They're not even going to put David Blau in the position to read for a dangerous pass for, you know, to set up an obvious pick six, because that's where, like you said, Michigan's strength lie. I think it's if Purdue forces turnovers. Yeah. So I think that's on that end of the ball. If Purdue forces turnovers, you feel really good about our chances, right? It's just, that's the end that I'm really concerned about.
Well, I think you hit on a profundity there, and that is that if the coaches do what they're going to do, which is try to keep Purdue out of the position where they have to make plays that will, you know, that puts them in danger, you know. So it really comes down to scheming. Don't force it. So does that mean Purdue's going to be conservative? Absolutely not. But I think it's just going to be smarter football.
No,
so,
it's smart football. Yeah.
I'll say Purdue wins a turnover battle. They win the game. And you say not necessarily, but you still think that.
I think it'll be close. Yeah, I think it'll be close in the mid-20s. Both teams are going to be in the mid-20s. I think I had 27-24. And for Michigan's offense to put up 27, like, you know, you still gotta see it. I don't think they, what'd you say? They went 2.5, 3 quarters without a touchdown, last game. So it's like, you know, I think, Nick Holt might be earning his money this week. So we'll see.
I think he's already earned it. If you ask me, you know, he and the whole coaching staff have already, you know, they're worth their weight in gold. And I've already joked around with people about contract renegotiations happening right after this game.
Honestly,
room underneath Ross 8.
Win this game and Tennessee and Notre Dame are already going to be sniffing. And I say, just give them a 10-year extension. Just do it. Just do it. Come on. It's only money. You could buy happiness.
It's only money. The Big Ten has a tree for every team in the conference anyway, so they just go and pluck a few dollars off it.
That's the crazy
thing.
That's
never any money. We all know that. That will never, ever go away.
Oh, no. Oh, my God. I just – it's fun to be in this position, so that's all I'll say. It's really fun to be in this position, and this game is going to be fun. This game is going to be a lot of fun, especially on when Purdue has the ball. Like, that matchup is going to be fun to watch, and everybody will be watching it. Yep. So just get on Twitter, and everybody will be tweeting. All the smart football guys on Twitter will be tweeting about it. So we will leave you with that. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you to martinvintage.com for sponsoring. Remember, use the code BOILED when you go there and you buy your shirt, and you look as good as a niche. martinvintage.com. And thanks for listening to the Boiled Sports Podcast Network, a version of the Handsome Hour that's a little bit of a mix-up, but still just as handsome. We appreciate you taking some time out of your day and listening at work, hopefully, and getting a little respite there. BoiledSports.com, the Handsome Hour, BS all the time.